नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Text 24. Evam Gunai Pramyamane Manasi Avikala Puman Yan Tatsamyatam He Did I miss a line? Sorry. Condition. What was that? Touch. I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Badre? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, okay. I see. Badre. He. Alinga. Lingavan. Eva. Evam gunar brahmyamane. Manasya vikala puman yati tatsam yatam badre hyalingo lingavanniva evam gunar brahmyaman evam gunar brahmyaman brahmyamane Manasya vikala puman yati tatsamyatam badre yalingo lingavaniva evam gunar brahmyamanane manasya vikala puman yati tatsamyatam badre Yalingo lingavaniva. Ladies, please. Mm-hmm. Evam, in this way, gunai, by the modes of material nature, brahmyamane, when shaken, manasi, the mind, avikala, changeless, puman, the living entity, yati, approaches, satsamyatan, the same condition of agitation as the mind. Badre, O my gentle mother, he, indeed, alingaha, without a subtle or gross body, lingavan, possessing a material body, eva, as if. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. In the same way, O my gentle mother, by the way, Hiranyakashipu is the speaker here. In the same way, O my gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movements of the modes of material nature, the living entity, although freed from all the different phases of the subtle and gross bodies, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. Please repeat, in the same way, O my gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movements of the modes of material nature, the living entity, although freed from all the different phases of the subtle and gross bodies, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13, Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridatuke svadi kalatradishu boma ijyadi yatirta buddhi salile nakarichij janesh vabigyeshu seeva gukaram. Which means, quote, a human being who identifies the body made of three elements as the self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of his birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to bathe rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like a cow or an ass. Unquote. Although Hiranyakashipu was a great demon, he was not as foolish as the population of the modern world. Hiranyakashipu had clear knowledge of the spirit soul and the subtle and gross bodies. But now we are so degraded that everyone, including the exalted scientists, philosophers, and other leaders, is under the bodily conception of life, which is condemned in the Shastras. Sa eva gokara. Such persons are nothing but cows and asses. Hiranyakashipu advised his family members that although the gross body of his brother Hiranyaksha was dead, and they were aggrieved because of this, they should not lament for the great soul of Hiranyaksha, who had already attained his next destination. Atma, the spirit soul, is always unchanged, avikala, puman. We are spirit souls, but when carried away by mental activities, manodharma, we suffer from so-called material conditions of life. This generally happens to non-devotees. Harav abhaktasya kuto mahad gunaha. Non-devotees may possess exalted material qualities, but because they are foolish, they have no good qualification. The designations of the conditioned soul in the material world are decorations of the dead body. The conditioned soul has no information of the spirit and its exalted existence beyond the effects of the material condition. Omagyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitem yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So here we have in this verse Hiranyakashipu expounding the Vedic philosophy and trying, while doing this, to pacify, to soothe, to quiet his aggrieved family members who are lamenting the death of Hiranyaksha, who was killed at the hand of Lord Varaha, who is another incarnation of Krishna. So he's acting like a very, like a great sage. And he comes off with this very elevated, very exalted philosophy. You know, there's no need to grieve. It's not necessary. Our Hiranyaksha really has never died. He is the spirit soul, and the spirit soul is eternal, ever existing, primeval, not slain when the body is slain. No need to lament. No need to grieve. He died in battle like a hero should die. And therefore, stop all this lamentation. It's absolutely not necessary, and we should not continue in this way. There's no need for this excessive lamentation. So he's trying to pacify them, he's trying to calm them, trying to quiet them like a loving father, a kind father, who appears to be unaffected, undisturbed, unshaken, calm. So that's he puts on a good show. A very, very good show. Demons are very good at pretending. And here you see the perfect demon. He's acting like he's the sage Vishvamitra, or the sage Vasishta, or the sage Vyasadeva. I mean, he's speaking the same words that they speak. But does he have the same feelings that they have? And that's the difference. His feelings are completely different. Although he appears to be calm, he appears to be controlled, he appears to be understanding, he appears to have a philosophical grasp, a collected mind, but does he really? For show business, yes. As I said, when he's on stage, he does a good job of putting it over on everybody else who's aggrieved. But in his heart of hearts, he is not only grievous, but as a result of the extent of his grief and his lamentation, as a result of the extent of that, he is filled with vengeance, hostility, hatred. He wants to only do one thing. You have to take the child out, please. Yes, the child must be taken out. I'm sorry. I mean, no offense to your child, but I do want everyone to hear what I'm saying, and I won't be able to say anything if he keeps uttering his wisdom. So, so Hiranyakashipu, as I said, is a very good stage actor, and demons are very good at that. And they're good because it means flim-flam. It means putting on pretending. It means being hypocritical. And that's the stock and trade of the demons, hypocrisy. They say one thing, but they mean another. A sincere devotee does not speak that way. He means what he says, and he says what he means. He's frank. He's straightforward. He's forthright. He does not, what do they call it, dissimulate. He speaks in a straightforward fashion. So Hiranyakashipu is, in his heart, he's rankling. His heart is agitated. He's upset. He's disturbed. And he wants to do nothing less, nothing more than what? Kill Lord Vishnu. Now, why is that? Here he has just spoken about that the body is not, we're not the body, not the mind, we're the spirit soul within. And yet, look at his actual situation. He's identified himself with his body. We know that because he's very aggrieved and very upset over his brother's death. Now, other people are dying in the world, but he's not upset about them because he doesn't have the mental connection with them that he does with his brother. He feels that a part of himself, because I am this body, my relatives are extensions, or my son or my brothers are extensions of my body because we have the same blood, and we've also come from the same mother. So we're connected, we're related. So he's thinking the way a materialist think, if my brother's body has been killed or slain or murdered or whatever, then a part of me has been murdered or killed or slain. And therefore, because he wants to live and not die, and yet he feels a part of himself has been killed, has been clipped off, has been chopped away, his brother. So, as in many families, when there are powerful brothers, powerful sisters, we take pride in them. Ah, my sister is a great actress. She got an Academy Award. My brother is a great politician. He's a senator. My son, he's up and coming, becoming a great basketball star. He's going to win the NFL trophy. So we take pride in our relatives and our connections or our relationships. And we love them because they give us a sense of greatness, a sense of bigness. In other words, we may be big, but those with whom we feel connected, who are also big, give us a larger or a bigger sense of ourselves, which is complete illusion. It's complete maya. But that's the way we think. My father, my brother or my sister, all of these. How often do we hear a person say, I remember years ago I used to work in motion pictures as a movie extra, and I would hear so many of my fellow workers, they would say, you know, my brother got an A part. Extra is like low on the totem pole. He got an A part, SAG, Screen Actors Guild part. He got three lines, and he's bragging like he's already ready for the Academy Award. Seriously. So much pride in the idea that my brother, who will say two or three lines, will be seen by millions of people. And isn't it so that Lord has beauty, wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, and renunciation? Well, fame is one of those that we all strive after. We want to be beautiful. And when we are beautiful, we have a beautiful face, beautiful hairdo, beautiful clothes. People say, oh, wow, hey, gee. And you feel uplifted. False. For a devotee, he should feel if somebody praises him, he accepts it graciously and says, oh, God, done another praise. Because it makes him feel that he's something that he's really not. The only thing he should be glad to hear some praise of is that I wish I could sacrifice my life to God the way you do. Of course, the devotee who's really sacrificing and is genuinely humble, he says, sacrifice? He says, I'm not even doing a fraction of what I should be doing. He's saying, a fraction? Yeah, I owe Krishna so very much. I'm doing very little. So when a devotee is praised, he doesn't like to be praised either. But if he's to be praised, at least for something spiritual, something devotional, something which is going to bring him to a higher status. Of course, identifying with praise is another way to the mind becomes agitated. Because if somebody or people are praising you for your beauty or your wealth or your strength, and you feel uplifted for that. Well, if you become poor, then what are you going to feel like? So yo big. If you're poor, but you are a multimillionaire, now you feel very tiny. In 1931 and 32, there was a very big depression, economic depression. And the result of that is that many people, in a few days, just went from millions of dollars to nothing. And they were all doing swan dives and off the 30 and 40-story building. Yeah, they were diving off because they couldn't face themselves as a little person, as an insignificant, inconsiderable, loathsome nobody. This is the illusion that people live under. When you're young, they ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? Translation, how do you want to be God when you grow up? How do you want to dominate? How do you want to control? How do you want people to look up to you? So children from the very early age are misled and misguided and misdirected. And they're thinking, you know, if they're not, for example, on the baseball team or they didn't make the varsity basketball team, sometimes they feel crushed. And lots of kids commit suicide as a result of feeling so depressed because they can't come up to the standard. And if they don't have parents who make them feel that they are loved, notwithstanding the fact that they can't come up to that standard, that they're appreciated for so many other factors, when a person has those kind of parents, it doesn't have too much of an effect. But if you don't have those parents, and so many parents feel just as depressed as the child, the son or the daughter, you know, daughter went out and she was in a beauty pageant and she placed last. Mother feels terrible. Doesn't even want to talk to the daughter. It's a horrible situation. And so many parents, they put their little daughters in these pageants when they're 6 and 7 years old. And hoping that they'll have a film career. Thinking that those things are going to enable the person, when he or she grows up, to have some substance. To have some purpose. To have some direction. No, all they're thinking of is fame and name and glory and honor. The family praises you. The friends praise you. I saw you on TV. And all these things, they have so much meaning. But when the time comes, when you're no longer in front of the cameras. Did anybody ever see that movie Sunset Boulevard? Anybody ever see it? Well, it was very famous because the last words in it, it's about a screen star who really went crazy. She no longer had her fame, but she had to live in the thought of the idea that she was still famous. And so a murder had taken place in her mansion, and she was the one who killed the screenwriter whom she was hoping would write a screenplay for her so that she could make a great comeback. So the police finally came, and there were TV cameras all around. But she saw they were news cameras. But she saw the cameras not as news cameras. She saw them as the cameras that used to photograph her when she was on the soundstage. And so she said to the cameraman, and she was looking around, she said, Mr. DeMille, the director, I'm ready for my close-up. You can take it now. It's insanity, madness. She was thinking that she was on a movie set. And this is what happens when we become completely afflicted by these different positions in human society. What happens is that we, as we say, lose it. And when the time later on, when the fame goes down, the name, people are not calling your name is not in the newspapers, you're not important. When that begins to happen, it's very difficult for a person to go on. And the way they generally go on is with drugs and alcohol and different ways that you can escape from the reality that you are, in your own conception, a nobody. This is very, very unfortunate. Everyone is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord has everything. He's all most beautiful, most wealthy, most powerful, most famous, most renounced, most knowledgeable. When we identify ourselves not with this material body, but we identify ourselves with the soul, being part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, then there can never be a sense of depression. There can never be a sense of collapse. There can never be a sense of contraction. Because you are connecting with the Supreme Being, the Supreme Lover, the Supreme Power. He who has everything. And when we feel our connection with He who has everything, then we, by extension, we, by connection, feel fulfilled, full satisfied, assuming that we are performing devotional service. And that's how we get that identification. We regain our identification. Originally, that was our identification, that we are part and parcel of the Lord. But when we wanted to live independently of the Lord, separately from the Lord, and try to become a Lord, a dominator, a controller, a manipulator, we wanted to usurp the position of God. When that happened, then the result was is that we disconnected ourselves in consciousness with the Supreme Lord. And the result was, as Srila Prabhupada says in here, is that when we want to achieve some particular material goal, we're in anxiety. We're in anxiety. We're anxious whether we'll get the result that we want. We're uncertain. We're confused. Or if we don't get the result, we may be depressed. Outwardly, we may learn how to smile, beautiful teeth and everything, so that we look like, oh, it doesn't affect me. It doesn't bother me. Meanwhile, you go home and you cry for the whole night. That's a fact. Because we have learned to put on a show, as Hiranyakashipu here is putting on a show. And it's very unfortunate when one has to go around the world, around through his life, trying to pretend to be something or somebody that he's not. It's not a sin to be a loser, although in this society it sure is. If you're a loser, then you're not worth anything. I don't even want to talk to you. I ignore you. But if you're a winner, everybody talks to you. But a devotee is always a winner because he's connected with the Supreme Winner. The Supreme Winner is Krishna. He can never lose. Sometimes he appears to lose when he plays with his cowherd boyfriends and they duel. And sometimes Krishna loses the battle. You know, this cowherd boy he's dueling with gets the stick against Krishna's chest. So Krishna has to carry him on his shoulders. Can you imagine the Supreme Lord of the universe is carrying his little cowherd boy because he lost? But nobody feels bad. Everybody feels good because they're all associating with Krishna. So no one need, in this philosophy, have an inferiority complex. That's for persons who identify themselves with their body. Now, another point that is made here is that the different modes of nature are always working on us. There's usually a predominating mode, and there are subordinate modes which exist. And sometimes the subordinate may even become prominent or predominant according to a person's karma that he has coming up. So in the mode of goodness, a person has a desire to do good things. He wants to relieve suffering. He wants to help people who are in distress. He always wants to do something that will be beneficial, that will be helpful, that will be gracious and kind, and something that, you know, he's sacrificial. He surrenders himself to the Supreme Lord where and when necessary. He goes out of his way for people. He may be a doctor. He may be a dentist. He may be a teacher. He may be a lawyer. He may be someone who does some helpful, useful work in the world. Now, the qualities of a person in the mode of goodness: he has patience, he has perseverance, he has purity, he has tolerance, he has understanding, he has knowledge, he has religiosity. These are the qualities of a person in the mode of goodness. But a person in the mode of goodness still identifies himself with the results of his actions. And he feels that his life is valuable primarily because he feels he's doing good to this world. He's helping people. He's assisting them. So his sense of identity or his sense of purpose, his sense of usefulness is that He thinks that people need him. That he's helping people. And as a result, he identifies with these results and thinks of himself as a good person. Yeah, I do all these things and I'm a good person. But that kind of thinking can get a person to come back to the material world. To get the same praise, the same glory, the same appreciation, the same applause that he gets from different people, thinking that that somehow is going to make him secure. It's not going to give any security. Although it gives you the illusion of security because so many people like you and so many applaud you, somebody write about you or talk about you in a positive way. And if you identify with that, then what is the result? The result of that is that at a time when you're no longer able to perform that service, again, you feel useless, you feel worthless, you feel empty. You get some sickness. You've been known for a very sharp, good mind. Now you have dementia. You have Alzheimer's disease. You can't even remember what somebody said just a half a minute ago. You're not that same sharp person. And what is the result? The result is that you feel, again, empty, useless, worthless, in spite of the fact that you felt so good while you were functioning in the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness is not the ultimate goal. Then we go to the mode of passion. In the mode of passion, persons generally are seeking fame and the opulence and wealth, thinking that those things will benefit them. And again, it's the same thing. You buy a beautiful Mercedes car, a Lamborghini, or one of those things, and everybody praises you. And then eventually, you might even be very wealthy when you're 80 years old or 90 years old. But if you have this dementia, or you have some spinal injury, or you can hardly walk, you have all these incapacitations, all these limitations, which you identify because you are thinking you're your body, and the result is you're not very happy. So the mode of passion will not give happiness. It will give temporary, momentary delight, but ultimately it brings grief, despair, and depression. And then the mode of ignorance, which is really a bad trip, as we say. Mode of ignorance is characterized by a tendency to be want to sleep, to not want to make effort, to be indolent, to be uncaring, to be thoughtless. Persons in the mode of ignorance think nothing, to be also unconscionable, that it develops into a state of unconscionableness. A person begins to take drugs. He may sell drugs. He doesn't care. He may kill somebody. These people, they call them hitmen. They don't think anything. They put an ad in some of these magazines. They don't call themselves hitmen, but you can tell by the way they've disguised their language. You can hire, yeah, what do they call it? Something for hire? Anybody remember? Anyway, they use a very interesting term which makes it look legal, but it's not. So you hire that person, and you've seen on very many news programs where women or men hired these guys to go and kill their wives so they could get the life insurance. And they did stings on these where they actually have videos of the whole thing taking place, the conversation taking place. It's amazing that a wife, you know, and she goes home, she says, "Oh, honey, you're so wonderful, I love you." Meanwhile, she's got this hitman hired, you know, to off him, going to kill him the next day. But, "Oh, honey, you're so wonderful, I love you." So this is, again, Hiranyakashipu mentality. Put on a good show, and at the end of the year, at the end, you know, what does it really mean? You don't even know who you are. Sometimes people even get the show mixed up with the reality. They don't know the difference between whether they're putting on a show or whether that's their real self. They become what they call pathological liars. A pathological liar doesn't even know when he's lying anymore. He just thinks that it's the truth and he has a justification for everything. So the point is this, is in the mode of ignorance, as I said, a person tends to be very indolent, very sleepy. He likes to take drugs. He likes to take different kinds of like Valium, will put him to sleep, or he might take heroin, or he might take any of these which disguise his real consciousness, which is one of pain, which is one of suffering, which is one of confusion, So what happens is, as a result of all of these things, they can't face themselves, they can't face their pain, can't face their uncertainties, can't face their doubts, can't face any of this. So you take a drug to mask it. And you act very cheerful and very happy and, oh, well, life is just a bowl of cherries. It's so wonderful. You take your Johnny Walker or your Sneaky Pete and you drink it. And you know, everything is so wonderful and so glorious, you know, and you go home singing, you know, the songs, whatever they sing when they're drunk. I don't remember. It's too far back now. So the main point is this, is that it's a miserable life. It's not a wonderful life like the movie says. It's a miserable life. And everyone is suffering from greater or lesser degrees of misery. The misery being greatest when you're in the mode of ignorance, and the misery being least when you're in the mode of goodness. Because you're in the mode of goodness, you have more freedom to progress. That's why it is said the mode of goodness is a precursor of pure goodness. Now, what is pure goodness? Pure goodness is having all of these wonderful good qualities, doing very beautiful and selfless and dedicated, devoted activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord and also for the pleasure of His devotees. When one does this, lives only to give pleasure to Krishna, he wants nothing in return for himself. He doesn't want to be famous. He doesn't want to be applauded. He doesn't want to have wealth for it. He just wants to serve the Lord, because service to God, number one, it's due Him. We owe it to Him. And number three is that there is no one more deserving of our love than Krishna. He's feeding us. He's clothing us. He's sheltering us. He's giving us friends. He's giving us here a temple. He gives us the deities. He gives us these scriptures. You can pick up a book there, even if you don't have a penny in your pocket. You can take the Bhagavad Gita and start reading it. He is so merciful, so kind, so loving, that He deserves our entire energy, our entire output. And all our love should go to Him because He deserves it. As I said, He's giving us everything that we need. And He also gives us a little illness, and we need that too. That may sound a little bit surprising, but we do. It is illness or difficulties, trials, tribulations, problems that really make us remember that we are not here forever, that we are all in a certain degree of illusion, and that if we don't get out of it, we may have to come back to this same planet or even go to a lower planet and suffer more. So Krishna is giving us this as the wake-up call. Wake up, he's saying. You're not going to have your body forever. Look around. People are dying by the thousands, although by the millions. But people think that, no, I'm going to die someday, but I know I'm not going to die tomorrow or the day after, especially when you're young. I'm definitely not going to die tomorrow or the day after. And as you get older, you're wondering whether it's the next 5 minutes. Because you got this creak, you got this headache, you got your teeth are shaking. You know, you're wobbling on your feet as you walk. All these things are taking place. So the net result is that devotional service is the means. Srila Prabhupada is so kind, so merciful to show us how to perform devotional service, to give us the book which gives us the instructions of what we have to do in order to achieve God realization, how to disengage ourselves from the illusion that we are the body, that we are the mind, and to understand and to feel and experience that we are the soul. Hiranyakasipu knows he's the soul, but he can't experience himself because he doesn't have the grace of God. Every one of us here is doing what is necessary to receive the grace of God. And we should continue doing it, serving the Lord, remembering the Lord, loving the Lord, serving devotees, whenever and wherever possible, because that purifies the heart. It pleases Krishna, and as a result, He blesses us unlimitedly with love for Himself. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Hare Krishna.